More problems for Mattel.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Perhaps Mattel should recall all of its toys and just start over. Today, the company issued its fifth recall since the beginning of August. This is a batch of 150,000 toys made in Mexico. Fisher-Price Laugh and Learn Kitchens. At least a couple of kids have started choking on small pieces that fell off the kitchen. We also learned today that several Chinese toy makers are looking to sue Mattel for ruining their reputations. Mattel has called back more than 21 million Chinese-made toys. This is something the Bush administration plans to tackle starting today, in fact. As we speak, the president is unveiling his plan to prevent unsafe products and food from coming into the country. More now from Amy Scott.
The proposal would beef up the agencies charged with policing imports. Inspectors would be installed in foreign countries to certify products. The Consumer Product Safety Commission would be able to impose penalties on companies that didn't comply with recalls. And the Food and Drug Administration would have the power to order mandatory recalls. Chris Waldrop with the Consumer Federation of America says currently the FDA relies on industry cooperation.
It's a voluntary process, and they have to negotiate with the companies that are implicated in an outbreak or some sort of event like that. We're hoping that the administration is recognizing the need to provide FDA with the authority to actually require a recall.
Congress has been working on its own fix. A Senate committee approved legislation last week to give the Consumer Product Safety Commission more teeth. The head of that commission, Nancy Nord, was expected to defend her performance before a House committee today. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Maybe a little bargain hunting on Wall Street this morning. The Dow is up 35 points so far to 13,579. The Nasdaq has gained 10. The S&P 500 is up 7 points. In Asia, stocks gained about 1% today. European shares are 0.5% higher. Social networking sites have signed up millions of new users this year. But Facebook and MySpace and the like are still trying to figure out how to make money off those people. This week, they could get a step closer. Janet Babin reports from our innovations desk at North Carolina Public Radio.
MySpace is expanding a program that lets advertisers more closely target their pitches to users. They do it by tracking all those juicy details you list on your profile page, favorite songs, movies, that kind of thing. Then they figure out what commercials you're most likely to respond to. Facebook's expected to announce a similar ad plan today, but it refused to release advanced details. Marketing expert Seth Godin, though, is skeptical. He thinks some people might consider it obtrusive. Godin compares it to AT&T selling ads in the middle of your phone calls.
Because there's lots and lots of phone calls made every day. What an opportunity. And they know lots about the people you're calling and lots about who you are because you pay your bill. So why not put ads in the middle of the phone calls? Well, the answer is pretty obvious.
Social networking sites are making the new advertising announcements at a tech conference in New York this week. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
It's the first Tuesday in November, and yes, there are elections today, a lot of state and local ones. Fewer than one in five people are expected to vote. So one city is basically bribing them. Dan Gretsch reports.
Your typical Miami Beach election draws fewer people than a slow night at a South Beach club. To turn that around, the city of Miami Beach is offering a financial incentive to vote. A 10% discount at participating businesses if you register, and 15% off if you actually vote.
Whether people are motivated by a sense of civic duty or basic human greed, you know, whatever works.
Rebecca Wakefield runs DoubleTheVote.com, a local voter information website. She says it would be illegal for Miami Beach to actually pay people to vote.
So I guess they sort of skirt the issue there. Because it's not, here, vote for this guy, here's $10. It's a little more subtle than that.
More than 100 businesses are taking part, including jewelry stores, pet shops, even Deja Vu's Love Boutique. In Miami Beach, I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, November 6th on Marketplace.org. Two top executives from Yahoo are expected to testify before Congress today, CEO Jerry Yang and the company's general counsel. The hearing will look at what role Yahoo may have played in the arrest of a Chinese journalist. More now from Paul Brandis.
Communist China has tight restrictions on cyberspace, blocking sites and cracking down on free expression. It imprisoned one Chinese reporter for writing about political reform. What does this have to do with Yahoo? The company admits and apologized for handing over information about the reporter's internet activities. The case speaks to the broader issue of just how much U.S. companies should or should not kowtow to Beijing.
Companies have to make their own decisions based on their views of what their shareholders and their customers think is right and about how to deal with these issues generally when they're doing business in China.
That's Aaron Ennis of the U.S.-China Business Council. But what if the biggest customer, the Chinese government itself, determines who does business there in the first place? Yahoo would not grant us an interview. The challenge for it and other companies is how to do business in China while adhering to Western principles. In Washington, I'm Paul Brandis for Marketplace.
Social networking sites have signed up millions of new users this year. But Facebook and MySpace and the like are still trying to figure out how to make money off these people. This week, they could get a step closer. Janet Babin reports from our innovations desk at North Carolina Public Radio.
MySpace is expanding a program that lets advertisers more closely target their pitches to users. They do it by tracking all those juicy details you list on your profile page, favorite songs, movies, that kind of thing. Then they figure out what commercials you're most likely to respond to. Facebook's expected to announce a similar ad plan today, but it refused to release advanced details. Marketing expert Seth Godin, though, is skeptical. He thinks some people might consider it obtrusive. Godin compares it to AT&T selling ads in the middle of your phone calls.
Because there's lots and lots of phone calls made every day. What an opportunity. And they know lots about the people you're calling and lots about who you are because you pay your bill. So why not put ads in the middle of the phone calls? Well, the answer is pretty obvious.
Social networking sites are making the new advertising announcements at a tech conference in New York this week. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
The system to fight against so-called blood diamonds is under review in Brussels today. It's known as the Kimberley process. It was set up to prevent diamond sales from being used to pay for war and other conflict. Stephen Beard has more.
The diamond industry is giving itself sparkling reviews. 5 years after the launch, the Kimberley process covers most of the global trade in precious stones. This means the vast bulk of diamonds that reach the market are certified conflict-free. They've not been used to finance any bloodshed. But third world campaigners claim the diamond certification system is flawed. Gems handled by guerrilla groups in the Ivory Coast and elsewhere are still getting through and reaching shops. Annie Dunnaback of Global Witness.
There are a number of countries that need to strengthen their controls, not only countries in West Africa and in Central Africa, but also major trading centres such as the United Arab Emirates, India, places like that.
Her group is calling for Venezuela to be expelled from the Kimberley process this week for not inviting international monitors in to examine its compliance. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
In 1990, Congress created the H-1B visa program. It allows U.S. companies to temporarily hire skilled foreign workers. But year after year, demand for these visas outstrips supply. For the high-tech industry, it's a big problem. Rachel Dornhelm reports on efforts to get Congress to allow more overseas workers.
The government hands out new H-1B visas every fiscal year to companies eager for the talent. These visas go fast, and they are capped at 85,000 for corporate workers.
All the slots got taken up the first day. Applications were available, which was April 1st.
That's Seth Sternberg, co-founder of Silicon Valley high-tech startup Meebo. He says the government ended up distributing the visas through a lottery. He won two this year. But Sternberg says relying on random lotteries is no way to run a business.
People who have these skills are snapped up in a heartbeat.
Large tech firms like Oracle and Microsoft lead lobbying efforts to raise the H-1B cap. If they're not successful, they can send foreign employees to work in their overseas offices. Companies like Sternberg's don't have that option and can lose business. Besides, Sternberg says, hiring foreigners isn't in itself a bad thing.
We help the American economy broadly, which I think is a goal everybody can agree on.
Not necessarily.
These employers, they don't feel the responsibility for hiring American workers. And if those American workers need a skill, they don't seem to feel the responsibility of spending the money and the time to train those Americans with those skills.
Rob Sanchez is a software engineer in Phoenix. He says he's been fired twice and replaced by H-1B visa holders.
Companies are dumping their older employees because they're more expensive and bringing in H-1B visa holders because typically they will work cheaper.
But Democratic Senator Maria Cantwell from Washington State says it's more about supply and demand.
There's an opening for 365,000 computer scientists on an annual basis in this country, and we're only educating about 80,000 people.
Legislation Cantwell attached to an immigration bill allowing more skilled foreign workers into the country failed earlier this year. Cantwell says she'll try again, but probably not this year. I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
At the end of last week, two New York doctors were sentenced for doling out illegal steroid prescriptions to thousands of people. They were paid by a New Jersey businessman to write prescriptions for people they'd never met or examined. It's the kind of thing we're starting to see more and more. A new book delves into the pipeline of steroids in this country. It's called Steroid Nation. The author is Sean Assale. Sean, we always hear about steroids in sports. How big are steroids outside of sports?
They're bigger outside of sports than they are in sports. You can take Hollywood, for instance. I mean, I'll make the argument that steroids, not cocaine, is the drug of choice in Hollywood right now. And you only have to look at some of the bodies on the screen to see that. And there's just a boom in these clinics that you will promise to return your hormone levels to where they were in your 20s if you're in your late 30s, 40s, or 50s. But, you know, anti-aging medicine is perhaps the biggest reason steroids are so deeply in our culture right now.
I mean, are these products legal?
Well, they're legal under a doctor's care. And so if you're a 45-year-old man like me, you can just walk into any of these anti-aging clinics, pay your $10,000 or $15,000 over the course of a year, and yeah, I mean, you're legally prescribed these things. If you're a kid, and this is another thing the book tries to, point out, that it's lunacy for kids to take this stuff. Where are those kids getting it? It's an entirely different world. They're getting it from the back of their gym, some dealer who's probably getting his raw materials from China and doesn't know what he's getting.
Yeah, I mean, how are the high schools dealing with this?
Well, right now there's a rush towards steroid testing and mandatory steroid testing in high schools in three states: New Jersey, Florida, and Texas. The danger that I see with that is that these are elementary tests. They're not the same tests that are used in the Olympics, and they're easy to beat. And I worry that they're expensive, they're easy to beat, and it's not the best way to detect this. I think, the best way to detect this is still for parents to know their kids, keep an eye on their kids, and that's why I'm hoping that for parents, a couple of days invested in this book will allow them to talk more knowledgeably to their kids.
We've all seen how the war on drugs has turned out. Is there a lesson to be learned from that as we try to tackle the steroid problem?
I think that the biggest problem right now is that we have an appetite that the international pharmaceutical community is filling. And I think, it's our performance-enhancing appetites that we have to sort of examine. And I do think that with respect to anti-aging medicine, it's a personal choice. And as long as it works and the government is giving us good information about whether it works or not, I see no problem with that. The government's got to be honest and say, look, they do work in some cases. Just let's tell you the cases. I think in sports, we may want to consider, do they have a place? Is there such thing as a therapeutic use of some of these steroids? Not to turn players into freakazoid record breakers, but, to let them get through the grueling seasons. I just think that there's some nuance needed in the discussion that I'm not seeing right now.
Sean Assale, the author of Steroid Nation, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.